Hi, I'm Brett Ullman. I'm really glad to be with you today to have a conversation called Hope for the Walking Wounded, which is really looking at how do we as Christians deal with the conversation on mental health, which during this COVID season is probably one of the two biggest conversations I have today. If you don't know me, let me just give you a few minutes on me. I do come from a town called Ajax. Ajax is about 45 minutes east of the city of Toronto in Ontario. My background is education. I'm a trained high school phys ed chemistry biology teacher. Spent my entire career teaching, I guess I'd say, rotary science to grade 7s and 8s. And I taught in inner city Toronto. And I left that 15 years ago to do this. And this is actually my full-time job. I do nothing other than travel and speak. Today, less traveling, more this kind of digital. But I speak on current issues. Mental health, probably one of the largest. The second would be parenting. I talk called Parenting, Navigating Everything. Then I have other tougher conversations, media, dating. We look at men, how do we be better fathers, husbands, and boyfriends, and then talking on pornography and sexuality as well. This is a quick picture of my family. My wife's name is Dawn. She's a nurse. My daughter Zoe is at a university called Western. She's in her first year, so she's part of the grade 12s that have had incredible loss. No prom, no grad, none of these things. She's doing okay at university. My son Ben is in grade 12, a senior. Again, another year that's supposed to be this really epic year in life, and a lot of loss as well. What I want to do today is to walk through a bit of my journey and to give you some very practical conversations of mental health. This image, for me, has so much meaning. I left teaching. I did a program called the Arrow Leadership Program. Went straight from Arrow into a master's degree at a school called Wheaton in Chicago, a master's in leadership and evangelism. But what I found was, is I was speaking way too much. My family, my wife, my board members, leaders would sit me down and have, you know, the intervention with me. Brett, you have to slow down. And I just kept saying, if I can just make it to March 1st, 2012, all will be good. And I did. Now, coming up to that, I was speaking 275 speaking dates a year to pay for my master's. Because I was in Chicago, which is for me is like a 50-minute flight, I'm still an international student, so it's quite expensive. So I reached March 1st, 2012. And then I began to have, what's the word? Let's call it issues. I was speaking at a church with 400 or 500 students in front of me, and suddenly the world turned sideways. My knees buckled. I'm 6'6". You can't tell from this, but I'm a big guy. And I kind of wondered in the back of my head, how do you gracefully pass out in front of 400 or 500 people? Went home that night, went to my doctor, and I said, you know, I'm struggling with some things. And we walked, had a couple conversations, and he said, I think you have anxiety. And I said, no, I speak on anxiety, because I talked on mental health for many years. He said, no, Brett, you actually have anxiety. It was kind of this weird, awkward conversation. Put me on some simple things, and I, a week later, thought, oh, I'm better. And I went and traveled. I was speaking in Windsor, Ontario. I was supposed to be doing 10 Catholic high schools. And on the second day, I found myself crying in my car. It's 8 a.m. There's nothing happening, and I'm not okay. Canceled my tour, went home, more doctors, more specialists involved. I had a bunch of this. I was speaking in Camrose, Alberta, East Coast, Halifax, a few other things. But it all kind of finished for me I call that my pre-breakdown. I kind of had a breakdown. I was speaking at a camp, and coming out of the McDonald's with my family, everything changed. It's funny for me, mine was a moment, and I suddenly couldn't walk. My wife walked me like a blind person to the car. I didn't leave the cottage we were staying in for the week, and I didn't leave my house for 5 months, and then I didn't work for a year. There's irony in my journey in that we're now 2020, almost 2021, and I still struggle with panic, and I still struggle with anxiety, and to a minor level, but I still have it, would be a conversation on depression. And this image, these roads going a million directions, was what I had in my life as people and leaders and friends each walked into my home, and each of them would say things like, often I'd hear this, hey, Brett, have you tried Jesus? And I would say, what do you mean by that? And they're like, well, you know Jesus. And I'm like, I do know Jesus. But what do you mean by, have I tried Jesus? Kind of like it's a chocolate bar and I hadn't taken enough. And they would then leave. And then I would then sit and wonder, you know, Jesus, have I not tried enough of you? And what does that mean? And the next person would say, have you tried running? And I would say, I haven't left the house in 5 months. And they would say, but have you tried running? Have you tried vitamin D, B12, these doctors, those doctors? And it was chaos. Everyone offered me a different road in a different direction. I'm very pragmatic. I want a solution, something I can walk through. And one day my wife said to me, what would you do if you ever worked again, if you ever spoke again? And I said, I'd love to have an answer. I'd love to begin a conversation of what do you do if you're struggling with anxiety, with mental health? How do we have a biblical but practical, those words are not oxymorons. How do we have an answer for that? And that's where the beginning of this conversation came. Here's my quick outline for our time. I want to look at anxiety and depression. What are they? I know there's so much more to that. Schizophrenia, bipolar, there's tons of things. First steps, what do you actually do to get help? Faith, how does our faith play a role in this? And then just some practical thoughts. For you, your family, I say some leadership in this area, and then I hope we're done, and I hope we're not done. I hope that you take this back to your families, to, you know, small groups, to whatever, to your workplace, and that this conversation becomes more of an ongoing thing in your environment. So depression, anxiety. First, I would say this. I don't even know if we have a good definition of this. Meaning, every day of my life, people post on anxiety and depression, and they're all different. If you take a continuum, here to here, doing well, not doing well, I would say that there is a kind of a greater conversation we need to have, because all anxiety is not the same. Right now, many of us are anxious. If our kids go to school, if we have to go to work outside of the home, if you go grocery shopping, there's an anxiety. Is it the same as clinical anxiety? I would say no. Could it, if COVID drags on for a long time? Maybe. What about anxiety we have as parents, looking at who will our children marry? What will they do for work? As for me, when my daughter headed off to university for the first time a number of months ago. And then you have like clinical anxiety, social anxiety, people who wouldn't come to your church or an environment. You know, even today we're finding kids with social anxiety are doing better at school because often it's Zoom-based or other things in some areas of the country. And then depression's the exact same. Doing well, clinical depression. But in the middle, there's a kind of a mix of all kinds of things. I think we're all a little bit blah right now as COVID kind of drags on. How did these things look physiologically in my life? Well, I would say dizziness would be the biggest. I often, when I'm anxious, I feel dizzy. If I was with you physically speaking right now, I'd be sitting in a big kind of office chair, a wingback chair. For whatever reason, when I lean back in a chair, my body responds with a bit more calm and I'm able to actually walk through my conversation. Heart palpitations, sweating for no reason, thinking you're going to die or have a heart attack, feeling that there's pressure on your chest. There's thousands of these. For me, the biggest would be not sleeping. I haven't slept through the night once since March 1st, 2012. I'm up every sleep cycle, usually about 5-6 times a night, sometimes more, sometimes less. And if you're watching this and you struggle with sleep, you understand. You wake up exhausted. Your body responds with anxiety. Anxiety causes sleeplessness. And you see this kind of cycle that gets kind of built into your life. Here's a great quote. It says, people have taken to exaggerating everyday experiences and punctuating them with sentences with terminology appropriate for a psychologist's office. They aren't nervous for an upcoming work presentation. They have bad anxiety. They aren't uncomfortable to go to a big party where they don't know anyone. They have social anxiety. And they don't get butterflies in their stomach. They have panic attacks. I just think we need to be careful with our language these days. Everyone deserves to be taken seriously. And if you are a student listening and you have to present, you know, digitally to a class, or if you're able to go physically to a class, that's great. But if you're nervous about that, let's not call it anxiety. We'll call it nervousness or other things. If you have to go to an environment, and I know we're not doing big parties anymore, but if you do one day, and one day we will go back to that, and you don't know anyone, let's not call it social anxiety. It's okay to have butterflies or different terminology for that. Let's just separate the language. Now, this is one of the slides I think we could spend all day on. One thing I get quite often is people say that all mental health comes from our phones. And I would show you my phone, but I'm filming it on my iPhone, so that's my iPhone. But the truth is this. Anyone who says all mental health comes from smartphones, please just delete that email or just don't respond to the conversation. It's a lot of fear-mongering and it's just not true. iPhone came out when my daughter Zoe was in grade one, kindergarten. Since that time in society, we've seen a growth of mental health between 25 and 40%. Some statistics go higher than that. But the truth is lots of other things have changed. So yes, the infinite scroll, right? Instagram never ends. We spend a lot of time on it. And for all of us listening, we're not just students, adults struggle with these things as well. FOMO, fear of missing out. When I'm on my phone looking at what someone's doing here, I'm not present because I actually want to be there where they're at. The relentless pressure we put on students today, the poor diet we have, lack of sleep, we're just not enough. dopamine. Dopamine is the love drug if you give someone a hug or a kiss. And we also get that, though, when my Apple Watch taps me and says, you know, my sports team has scored a goal or a basket or whatever else it might be. It's also every time someone likes, like, I don't have that notification anymore, but if someone comments on Instagram or likes something and it dings on your phone, we get a dopamine hit. Here's the problem. What does a million dopamine hits do to a human? And we don't know. But today, students, you're the petri dish, you're the experiment, and things are not looking good. Stats of anxiety and mental health in high school and with young adults are just through the roof. Now, there's a kind of a caveat to that, I'll just say in one second, but the truth is, it's through the roof, but we see it greater today in teen women, teen girls. And so there's questions we need to address with that. Now, the one thing I just say with a caveat is this, is during COVID, we're actually seeing good mental health, better mental health with students. You're home more with parents, which is a great protective thing for that. Number two, school, because many schools are digital, you're actually sleeping in more. You go to bed late, yes, and get up late, but you're sleeping in more. Less social media because nothing's happening. There's nothing to see. And these are all really interesting things. I have an article I posted online from The Atlantic just talking about how there's good mental health. As a side note, I'll give you all my information at the end where you can go and find all this stuff. Over-parenting, to the parents who are listening, we need to make sure that we are not over-functioning and in turn making our kids under-function. And then our kids head off to university, college, apprenticeships, unprepared. I just finished a video series on, you know, things our kids should learn before they're 18. But overparenting is a big issue. Some of us have a predisposition to mental health. I think that might have been me. Trauma you could have, burnout, breakdown, isolation and loneliness. And isolation and loneliness is an issue. I just finished a book called Parenting Navigating Everything. And I'll show it to you at the end of this talk. But my 16th chapter in this book was on loneliness, because everything I studied came back often to a conversation of loneliness. Mental health, how we feel isolated and lonely when we live in our own heads and we're disconnected. Parenting, parents with young kids feel so lonely. Students today, you're one of the loneliest generations ever. Sickness and substance abuse. The point is that there's a lot of conversations. There's a lot of reasons here, and these get entangled as well. So it's not as simple to say, here's how you had mental health, and here's how you've had mental health. Way back in May, they said 50% of Canadians say that they have worse mental health. I disagree with this. I don't think anyone has better mental health. I think, like, and again, you can have good mental health while dealing with mental illness. It's a larger conversation for another day, but you can work at, even when we're having tough times, having better mental health. And I say today, we're all a bit blah, right? All of us. Doesn't matter where you live, province, doesn't matter anywhere. And I mean, I know most people listening here are from Manitoba. I say most people, you're from Manitoba. The truth is that, like, you know, your province has been shutting down and different things like this. And so I would just say, we're all a bit blah. Canadians, we began to, and let me just take off this video here. This was a study done at University of Alberta. It was a Maclean's Magazine article. But look at these statistics. How many people felt life was hopeless? 51%. Overwhelmed by all they had to do. 88%. That's the only one I don't care about because I don't know when people were polled. Lonely, 62%. Very sad, 66%. So depressed it's difficult to function. Over a third. Overwhelming anxiety, 52%. I would put forth this is your church, this is mine, it's every church from, you know, for us as Canadians, from Victoria, British Columbia to St. John's, Newfoundland, and everywhere in between. I do think, and I know this morning that we're kind of going through these things quickly because there's a lot I want to cover in our short period of time, but I think we give a different set of rules for people with mental health than we do with other things. Cancer, diabetes, the list goes on. First comic, have you tried, you know, not having the flu? Nobody would ever say that to somebody with cancer, but it's something we get told quite a lot for those of us with mental health. If we could try to not have mental health, we would have done that. Like, no one wants to struggle with mental health. The person gets told it's like you're not even trying to stop bleeding. And the last photo is a picture of someone giving themselves an insulin shot for diabetes. I don't think it's healthy you have to take medication every day just to feel normal. Don't you worry, it's changing you from who you really are. If we're going to begin with a foundation, let's just say this. Everyone can start at a place of moving forward, of getting better. And I think we all have to have the same set of rules, not different. Now, the number one question people write me, and let me just bring back my camera here. The number one question is this. People ask me, you know, I'm a Christian. What about medication? It's really, let me just pause for one sec before I walk through this. It was a year and a bit ago, I got diagnosed with Lyme disease, which is not, it's not an easy diagnosis. It's not an easy cure conversation around it. And so I began taking medication. And I posted online, you know, for my Christian friends and family. I said, hey, I'd love your prayers. Do you know how many people wrote me and said, you shouldn't take medication for Lyme? None. Do you know how many people wrote me when I posted before saying I'm going on medications for mental health? Thousands. And I'm not exaggerating. Because I travel and speak, I have a lot of social media like followers. And when I posted, thousands of people wrote me over that upcoming year, Brett, you're not a Christian because you're taking meds. Can you think how demoralizing and discouraging that is, as you are unwell and you're just trying to get better and someone says you're not a Christian anymore? No one would ever say that to someone taking medications, chemo for cancer or taking insulin for diabetes. And that's the list I have here, all of them down to sleeping pills. No one cares. What I mean is we might over-prescribe, we find best practices, but you take, like if I have allergies, I take a Claritin or a Reactin. But once we hit depression and anti-anxiety medications, we're so polarized. One person once said, Brett, meds are always good. And I'm like, dude, are you a drug dealer? Like, that's a creepy kind of sentence. But other people who say meds are always bad. It's kind of interesting. The people who've complained the most to me about medications are all wearing glasses. They say, Brett, you should just trust that God will heal you. But they're wearing glasses and the glasses are used because they can't see. And if I was reading right now, I'd be wearing glasses as well. Kind of a side comment there. Now, if after my, I don't know, 1 minute conversation on medication, you're like, Brett, I don't care. Meds are always wrong. Here's my response to you. That's okay. I think you're wrong, but that's okay. You and me can still be brothers and sisters in Christ and still have differing opinions, and that's okay. But I would just say, I want us to think through our opinions and make sure that, you know, iron sharpens iron, but it takes iron to sharpen iron. And I would say that this conversation here has hurt a lot of Christians. When I travel and speak, one of the things I hear most is that the church has hurt people. It hasn't helped people. And that's a real unnecessary barrier from an evangelism standpoint. And it's real unnecessary, you know, for a body of Christ to be hurting, being hurt by the church. And I think we can change these things. We just need to think through them more. Now, I put up a few videos. One of them is six things to do before you ever take meds, because if you can never be on meds, that's what I choose. And there's some things we do before we go on medications. Then I did another video on what to do if you have to go on medications. So how do you know if someone is struggling with mental health? Now here's just some things. Changes in eating and sleeping patterns. Now if you're a parent and you have a kid like I do in grade 12 who's now going to bed at midnight and waking up at 10 in the morning, there's nothing wrong with that. That's actually when kids' brains shut down, and that's why it's kind of more normal for them to do that. Now could it mean mental health? Maybe, and this is the problem we have right now. We don't know sometimes. Social isolation, withdrawal, mood changes, but how many of you haven't felt those things in the last few weeks, if not even today? Not able to function, these are things. People who don't shower, eat, get groceries, we know their struggle there. Apathy, and many of us have a loss of desire to do things right now because, you know, COVID fatigue, as you've heard it called. We're seeing a growing, it's funny, mental health, parenting, my first two booked talks during COVID, but pornography is my third as addictions skyrocket, as people look to feel better by doing things like alcohol, drugs. We call this self-injury often. You're looking to hurt yourself, but in order to get beyond your overwhelming emotions. Self-deprecating comments. And the last one's just no signs. It's just really hard to find. And that's the problem today. So what are first steps? If you today are struggling and there's a million roads and a million directions, what can you do? Now I'm going to go through this really quickly, but I think the answer is really simple. I think it's looking at the body, it's looking at the mind, and looking at the soul. Now, your issue might be physical, so go see a doctor. And I'm going to give you a few slides on how to go more in depth on this, but go see a doctor. Your issue might be emotional, psychological. Go see a registered, trained psychologist, counselor, therapist. Now, you're waiting for me to say, and it might be spiritual. Language is so important here. It is incredibly, unbelievably uncommon that the answer to mental health is faith. But, and please hear this, our faith sustains us in these journeys. God says you'll have trouble, but he'll be with us in the trouble. So whatever happens in the end, God is with us in this journey, which is why in this journey, body, mind, and soul, we build our faith as well. I really like that. It's more like three circles as well, and each thing affects the other thing. And from a COVID application, if we can call it that, I would encourage you every day to do something for the body, for the mind, and for the soul. It's kind of how my family has been walking through this season. Now, this is a question I've been asked a number of times here, and let me make sure you can see it. Do Christians have less struggles with mental health? What a great question in Q&A. And my response for a long time was, no. We as Christians, if we poll our churches, have cancer, right? We have, you know, we have Alzheimer's, we have different things that are going on, and we don't have less statistics than other groups around us. But the answer to this was, yes, we do. Now, it's not what we might think, meaning it's not like someone walks into your church this morning and meets Jesus and suddenly they don't have mental health. It's from the term is religiosity, and we use this as a negative term. Usually we say we have a relationship with Jesus. It's not about the structure of the church. But the structures of the things that we do help us, right? We meet together. We have small groups. We see each other. Even today, like we're doing a conversation, even though I'm not physically with you, and we're thinking on these things. And all this stuff, especially the interaction we have, helps protect us against the alienation and the loneliness. I really like that. And everything I say right now is going to be body and mind and soul. Someone once said, well, is the answer Jesus or medication? And I'm like, change the language. It might be Jesus and medication and exercise and sleep and a counselor. Right? I'm an and person. I'm not an or person. As a side note, every single one of you watching thinks body, mind, or soul is more important than the other. And it doesn't negate the others. You just lean towards that. I'm a kinesiology major. I lean heavily towards the body. Many counselors I know quickly lean towards the mind and trauma. And many people just lean towards Jesus. And I would say, yes. Like the answer is yes. It's yes to all of those things. So I'm not going to go through all of these, but you can look at these. As a side note, you can take pictures of any of these, and I have many of these filmed online, and your church will be able to post this, and I might post this online as well. It's just great to have content you can find later and walk through this. But have physicals. I have a physical done. Have blood work done to see what's going on. A sleep specialist. And I have a YouTube video on this, but I went, and saw a sleep specialist, and he told me that he couldn't fix me. And he just said, like, tick it off the box. There was nothing that I had that was wrong. A friend of mine somewhere, I think it was in Alberta, had a breakdown, not doing well. His church just said, just keep praying and you'll be fine. And I'm not saying don't stop praying. I would say keep praying, but go to a sleep clinic. And he did. And the doctor said, you have the worst sleep apnea he's ever seen. He got one of those, I call them Darth Vader machines, BiPAP, CPAP, and he was better very, very quickly. I'm not presently on medicine, but I will take it again if I need it. You can see books, naturopaths. My point here is, if you're struggling with mental health, I want you to exercise daily. I want you to sleep better, and I want you to eat better. Just simple things. Now, the truth is, this is good for everyone, right? This is good for protective conversations on resiliency and other things as well. While we're doing that, do this. Get a counselor. Get perspective. Get strategies. As I said before, me sitting and speaking is a strategy. I have strategies. I was walking yesterday and I began to feel tightness in my chest. And I have strategies of quickly breathing and changing my thought processes and different things that can help. Even here, if you need to get referrals to a psychiatrist or someone, a psychologist talk, psychiatrists can give you medications if needed. And while you're doing that, build your faith. This is something we need to continue to do. Spiritual disciplines, read, pray, fast, study, give, all the things that we do to try to be like Christ, right? These are great. I have a list of books for this I'll give you at the end of the talk. And this is the same thing, but when I'm speaking in a public environment where I can't really talk about faith being our faith in God, but you know, well-being, purpose, volunteering, gratitude, relationships. The spoons analogy is just like if it's pens, like I only have this many things to give out each day. Well, you don't give all of it to playing video games or, you know, doing like give it to like what's most important, school, right? Work, family, church, those kinds of things. Mindfulness, and we'll go through that later, and reflections and friends and family. How does our faith play a role in this? This was a picture, I think it's Edward Munch, called The Scream, and I spent a lot of time trying to understand why this is happening to me. And I stopped my research when I read a book by Richard Winter called When Life Goes Dark. Now, this is a really interesting list. And here's what he says. Any reason you've ever suffered or will suffer falls into this. Number one, we're caught up in a fallen world and we're deeply affected by it. I just realized I haven't had my camera on for a bit. The truth is, we're caught up in a fallen world and we're deeply affected by it. The truth is, I think that's so true. Genesis 3, we live in this fallen world and we're deeply affected by what's going on. Number two, we live with the effects of others' sins. One of my best friends growing up was killed by a drunk driver about, might be 17 years ago now. We live with the driver's decision to be drunk and high. We live with that forever. We live with our own sinful nature. People told me to slow down. I said, I'd be fine. I'll be fine. I was wrong. Number four and number five are ones we don't like, but we can't not talk about them. Ephesians 6:12 is in the Bible. Now, too often, we either think everything's spiritual or we think nothing's spiritual. And I would just say too often, I think we call everything mental health spiritual, but we wouldn't do the same for cancer. But I would say a book by Neil Anderson called The Bondage Breaker is a pretty good beginning conversation here. And God's Discipline and Discipleship. These are verses in the Bible we don't like. God tests his people to know what's in their hearts. It's good for me to be afflicted so that I might know your decrees. Now, the truth is this. As a Christian, which of these are me? I don't know. But the truth is, my life, my ministry, my health, my all are for his kingdom, his rule, his reign, his all. I could have never had this conversation 8-9 years ago that I can actually have now on mental health. Now, what do you do in this place? Romans 8:28 is one of the verses that I always just say is one of the most misused verses for us who struggle, because people just say to us, they say, well, you know, Brett, everything will be good because it says it will be good. Now, we can't read into this more than it actually says. You know, Paul does not say all things are good. If a year from now I'm able to travel and I come to your church and I'm there physically and I said, tell me something that's happened since I did this talk. Many people could tell me. We had a windstorm yesterday and, you know, power outages and there were car accidents and lots of other things. Very random. There are things that happen that are kind of in this random thing. Heart attacks. One of my board members died of a heart attack at 41 the other year. Did these people who were hurt or died of different things only need to read their Bible more and pray more and they would have been healed? That's not proper theology. Even in the scriptures, people did not have that. Like John the Baptist was beheaded. Jesus was murdered. The disciples, most were murdered and martyred. Even people often say to me, what about Job? You know, and it's kind of like, well, Job came back, but Job's family did not. Like when the wind came and the house fell and Job's, you know, his children died. Now, let me just say this. Is God's kingdom moving towards its end in Revelation? Yes. Is it good? Yes. Is all of life going to be good? No. We live in the now, but the not yet. We're not in the yet. We're not in heaven. We're not in the next place where we won't have these negative things. Jesus says we will have trouble, but he'll be with us in the trouble, no matter what the outcome might be. And it's not always a good outcome. In other words, I heard a person translate this different. They said the translation should be a verb, meaning no matter what's happened or how it's happened, God is working with and fighting for you to bring it out for the good. And I really, really like that. Let me just move forward here. There is a lot of other conversations we could have here. What I want to do is to walk through a few lists. One list is the things I'm going to ask you never to say again. And the other one is the things that we can say. So this is a list of things that people have said to me many, many times. The first would be everything happens for a reason. Now, I don't believe this is true, and I don't believe it's biblical. If you take this farther, it actually becomes determinism. And I think that's more Islamic than it actually would be Christian faith. Here's how this goes, though. You come into my house, you sit down, you say, Brett, everything happens for a reason. And then you leave. And then I and other people would be left with, well, what is the reason? In all our unwellness, we're trying to figure out in all of God's sovereignty, what might that reason be? Number two is God must have something amazing planned. He might, but maybe don't tell someone, you know, God did this to you on your darkest day. Are you still reading your Bible? I get this one a lot. It's kind of like if you stop reading your Bible, God kind of goes like bzz, bzz, bzz to people and does this, and that's not proper theology. words from God, many people tell me, have told me, you know, I don't come from usually that tradition. I'm willing to listen to anyone who says to me, God told me. But one woman said, I've lead paint poisoning. And when I challenged her on it, she just walked away from me. God won't give you more than you can handle. It's not in the scriptures. How about when, I think it was in 2 Corinthians, we were burdened beyond all we could handle, which is basically, we've had more than we can handle. When we have more than we can handle, we lean back on God. If you need any help, let me know. All I'm saying here is this. Don't say to someone, if you want to go for coffee, let me know. If you want a burger, let me know. Actually, just do it. Take them out for a meal. Like, often mental health is called a non-casserole illness. Think on that for a sec. When I fell off my bike 2 summers ago, broke 8 bones. People brought meals. You know how many people brought meals when I had my mental health struggles? None. It's interesting how we view it. You know, is there sin in your life? Have you tried praying, Satan the demonic? Don't tell someone they'll be okay, because we don't know that. But here's what you can do. I'll just move myself down here. How are you today? And today answers everything. I can answer today. Say I'm praying for you and actually do it. Just say something. Say anything. I have many people who never address my mental health. They've never said, how are you doing, in 8 years. Give them a hug. Maybe right, not now. Sit with them. Listen to their journey. Ask, how is your struggle going? Talk about something else. There's lots of things we can do. And it says shawarma or Big Mac. All I'm saying here is there's something about food. And on one of my darkest days, somebody brought me a chicken shawarma, which is one of my favorite foods. And it was, there's just something special about food. You know what I miss most from my Baptist roots when I was growing up? Potluck Wednesdays, where we'd sit as people together and talk. I just really, really miss that. I love in 2nd, I think it's 2nd Corinthians. I want to make sure I get it right. Which says, where are we here? Where am I? Right here. 2 Corinthians 1:3. Who comforts us in all our troubles, so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. I really, really like that. Now, I have a YouTube series I made, and I would encourage you, as we head into the winter right now, to watch one of these a day. Each of these are looking at, they're 2 minutes, you know, exercise, sleep, diet, using space, just simple conversations around our mental health during COVID. I'm going to actually very quickly, just walk through these, like connection, less news you can get, breathing. Please look at this. This is just about when you're anxious, how if you change your breathing, it will change, you know, how you are thinking. Counseling is so important. Scheduling, reading books, family check-ins. If you have young kids, you can use an emoji check-in. Especially young boys can say, this is how I'm feeling. It's a lot easier than actually expressing it. Have more positive, limit work, grace and mercy for everyone, for teachers, for medical people, for frontline workers, for people working in grocery stores, everyone. Things we miss, Char, if you have young kids, check that one out. Music, you know, do today well. Please have family dinners while you're at home, and lots of puzzles and games. That was just some very practical things that you can look at doing during COVID, because we can and we will walk through this, but what are things that we can do to keep up our mental health in this season? Some thoughts, some resources, and we're done. Please advocate for each other, right? Stand in that gap. Sometimes the people who are unwell, we don't know what we need. And if you come alongside us, you could help us, right? Body, mind, and soul. Have you been to your doctor? Can I take you to your doctor? Have you had blood work done? Have you been to a sleep clinic? Hey, let's go for a walk today, right? There's lots of things that you can do. Now, I wrote this on my own wall, and I say it graciously to you. Stop being a victim. Stop making this your identity. And stop wallowing in misery. You know, I often say, sometimes I feel like nothing but anxiety and mental health, but I know that I'm much more than that. You don't choose what happened to you. You do choose where you go from here. Dr. Dan Siegel is one of my, I have many favorites, but he's one of my favorite authors. And he says, we need to help children, and I would change this to children, adults, anyone, understand that that the clouds of their emotions can and will roll on by. If you're watching this today and you're having a bad mental health day, it's okay. It's okay to not be okay. But the question is how do you look at moving out of that? And it doesn't mean that if today's bad, tomorrow will be bad. It might be different. If one door is not working, choose another. If one medication doesn't work, choose another. If one counselor doesn't work, choose another. The point is just this. I'm 49. If you're roughly my age, you might know the musician Bruce Coburn. He used to sing a line that says, to kick at the darkness till it bleeds daylight. This is a fight. So fight. I see so much apathy in the church world with mental health, where we just wait. Yes, we are praying and maybe waiting on God, but keep doing the things that we need to do. And Winston Churchill once said, never, never, never give up. You can make your church, you can make your, let me get rid of me so I can see this. You can make your church, your small group, anything, place of business, school, a relevant, accepting place for those of us who struggle with mental health by doing one thing, by talking about it. This is my favorite talk to do for a church service like this, because you get everyone and then we all can begin these conversations and it all kind of moves out from that. Design policies of prevention, right? Resilience, the other things, and care, and talk openly about these things. Some resources, and then we'll be done. The Canadian government has put up a thing called Wellness Together. If you Google Wellness Together or just go to caportal.gs, you'll find this wonderful collection of great free resources for us as Canadians, and you can find this online. My website is just my name. It's brettallman.com. I'll quickly throw that on the screen here. If you go to my brettallman.com and click on blog, you will find all of these things that are on the right-hand side. These are all the different topics that I speak on. And you can go, and like the mental health is the one we're talking about today. And there's 3.5-4 years of resources on this site. I think there's 1,200 blogs and articles. I take the best of what I can find because often I'm a curator. I take things and then say, here's a great YouTube video. Here's a great book that I read. And you can see there's lots of topics, mental health, media, parenting. All my social media is at the top. And I would encourage people to do this. When you hear a speaker or read a book by an author and you like what they do, go and like everything on their social media, all of them. Here's why. When I finish recording this and I go take a break and I maybe go on my iPad and look at social media, I don't want just food and people's dogs, even though I don't mind that. What I want are great resources and thoughts on things for me, like parenting and other conversations, mental health. And so I like lots of people who speak on and write on these things, and then I get that sent to me all the time. This is on my YouTube channel. My YouTube channel is at the top. I have about 120 videos up currently. Most are answering the questions that parents have asked me at my talks. And so just the few of them here. Look at the bottom. I walked for 6 months, and I think walking is a really great thing for mental health, and I would encourage you to do it. There's a few newer ones I've put up. The ones I mentioned about before you take medications for mental health and if you have to take medications for mental health. Parents, I did a whole series on things your kids need to learn before they're 18. I just posted one a few days ago about resiliency. And I do think with mental health, like other things, faith as well, we need to create good habits. And often I think we want to exercise, we want to read our Bible, we want to do these things, but we, for whatever reason, can't create these habits. And I have my list of my best habits books. I might encourage you to buy one called Atomic Habits, really, really great, by James Clear. Now, you'll find an earlier version of this on YouTube, but you can find this talk, your church will post somewhere. But these are other talks I posted digitally and online, and you can find and walk through these. I've actually just recently put a few of these on as online courses. I've written 4 books, 2 on media, 2 on mental health. My book, Reset, is actually a free digital download off my website if you sign up for my newsletter. It's really 18 stories looking at burnout, breakdown, and pain, leading to hope and healing and other things. Now, I've given you online my favorite books for mental health and my favorite books for loneliness. I think those are really, really important. And my 2 favorite books on mental health, both are actually not faith-based. You can add the faith content to that. But the Anxiety and Phobia Workbook is one. And this is the other one, just called The Ripple Effect. And I think this is really, really great. Just looking at sleeping better, eating better, moving better, and thinking better. A couple slides and we're done. This is actually my new book. It's called Parenting Navigating Everything. It is a 226,000 word book handbook. It's meant to be, the first 6 chapters are how do we have good relationships with our kids, communication, time, discipline. And then every other chapter are the big topics, with the largest by far being mental health. And the way I wrote this is that you as a parent could actually have your kid kind of junior high, senior high and above read that chapter as well. 2 slides. My counselor challenged me to put this beside my bed, and I really loved it. Great courage with great care. When there are days you get up And if you are watching this and you know you have days you just don't feel good, it's okay. Get up. Sometimes you just swing your feet over the bed and you chunk your day. Go to the shower, put some clothes on, go down and get some food, go to school, go to work. But then, so that was the great courage, but when you're done, great care. What are those things that fill you up? And this is where I think we need to help advocate for each other, to help each other, encourage each other, to find those things that fill us up. Devotions, time with God, walking. I think walking for me fills a whole bunch of those things. But what is it for you? The conversation today is a lot, and I know it's a lot, and I know it's emotional for those of us who struggle, but the goal was really simple, was to give you some tips and some thoughts to push you onto that road to hope and healing, or help you go farther down that road to hope and healing. And I love the idea of body and mind and soul. And I would encourage you to think through this, not only in your own life, but look at how you can help your kids, and then looking at it from a leadership perspective as well. If you have any questions, I know you can't ask me digitally like this, but please just find me on social media. I answer all my own content. Thank you so much for having me in. Hope you have a great day. I'll talk to you soon.